independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
I'm just refreshing weather.com at this point. What a boring life I live. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Justin Verlander wasn't very good on Friday night. Game one of the World Series, blows the five-run lead. Justin Verlander. You're not going to mess with your rotation. Javier is going to go game four. Justin Verlander is going to go game five. We all know that. But does Justin Verlander's next start scare you?
A little bit. Just simply because of the fact that, for whatever the reason is, your Cy Young Award winner that has been so good. Look, he's been an ALCS MVP. So it's not just you can't just say the playoffs like James Harden. But there is something going on with him in the World Series, and whether you call it a mental block or, you know, for whatever the case, the numbers don't lie. And this is a lot of people thought it was going to be series where it is imperative that you get more of the JV, that whether he gives up a hit or not, I don't care. But he mowed through the first nine guys in the lineup the first time through and then was a totally different pitcher. We mentioned he didn't have good command of his curves and his breaking pitches. But that's something that, because you had a five spot given to you, was easier to try and to kind of weather the storm and get through. That might not be as easy to do if you don't have the kind of run support that he got. So, yeah, I am a little worried about his next start.
Cypress on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN97.5. How could JV's next start not be worrisome? The dude has been crap in the postseason. That's mostly true. World Series, he's been worse than the postseason. His postseason numbers, as you alluded to, Blank, have been relatively good. Now, the recent postseason numbers have not been very good. We all know the World Series numbers have not been good as well. I wouldn't go as far to say scare me.
I said worried.
Yeah, I would. Like, I mean, you do concerned. Have Verlander's, like, World Series recent numbers, and just in his career, his numbers in the World Series have been really, really bad. Like 8.378. I wouldn't be scared to start JV. I personally would predict a decent start. Nothing horrible, nothing excellent. That's kind of what I would just take for Justin Verlander. To me, like, I just have a quicker hook. Like, the leash needs to be quicker. If Justin Verlander runs into a spot in the fourth inning in a game five, like he ran into that spot in game one, you got to be ready to make a change with a little bit more urgency than you had. This is a World Series game, and it's a race to four victories. You can't allow, even if it's Justin Verlander, to have this long leash, because his World Series numbers, quite frankly, don't deserve it. They don't warrant it. Like, a lot of people were talking about, like, the debate about leaving JV in the game. And I heard a lot of people that I respect, to be honest with you. This is your horse. You have to leave him in that game in the fifth inning. You have to get, you know, innings from your ace, your horse, the top of the rotation. I would argue, no, you don't. I would argue that the bullpen might be your best weapon that you have, and you're looking at the first opportunity to turn it over to that bullpen, even if it's Justin Verlander. The other thing that I put a Twitter poll on this as well. What do you put more value in? Because I understand that Justin Verlander was great this year, right? The Cy Young. He had a 1.75 ERA. Historic season, especially for somebody at his age. But do you put more stock in his regular season? Or do you put more stock that in eight World Series games, he's 0-6 with a 6.07 ERA?
I think you have to go with the whole Janet Jackson philosophy of what have you done for me lately?
Well, then
yet
you'd
again.
Be pointing to the regular
yeah,
season.
No.
Yeah, you would.
No. Well, what he has done for me lately in the Seattle series will scare you, too. I'm talking about during this playoff run. He hasn't looked as dominant as he looked all season long. So I am more concerned because, unlike the regular season when he was stacking and racking win after win and successful start after successful start, when you look at his body of work in the playoffs, it hasn't been even close to what it was in the regular season. It hasn't been consistently good, or at least as good as it was in the regular season. There's been some stinkers and some clunkers. So that would concern me more, and I would be more focused on that because I need to know whether it's something physically or mentally or otherwise. I need to know what's going on. And I think the other thing, Jeremy, is you got to have a hard conversation with him going into this next start and say, hey, I understand how much leeway we've given you in the past. I understand how we've let you dictate how many pitches you throw and if you want to send the pitching coach back off the mound when he comes out to talk to you because you're ready and you got this covered, you got it all under control. You don't, because you don't have the control you had in the regular season. If I'm going to pull you, you're going to go along with it, whether it means you don't get another win or not.
See, I don't buy that in the playoffs, though. I know that he's had that, like, authority in the regular season.
I think that's part of the reason why Dusty didn't go get it.
Well, he went four innings against Seattle. So, I mean, why give him the other inning? Like, I can't use that as the reason why Dusty didn't go get him whenever he had a shorter start this postseason.
I can tell you that the World Series stuff mattered. The World Series was factoring on both of both knew about it.
Dusty said he didn't.
But you believe that?
No, I don't.
Okay. And I believe both knew about it, and I believe Justin was pressing for it because that was more pressing for him than anything else that could have been discussed. The Seattle series, he knew he didn't have it. He knew it, and it was okay with him because he had been there and done other good things in the past. I think with this World Series, especially given a 5-run pad, I believe this was his way of saying, I can finally get off the schneid. And when things started to go bad, he kept thinking to himself, but I'm going to fight my way out of this. And almost like he had to. And I believe there's a conversation that has to be had one way or another about where he is going into his next start regardless.
Yeah. To me, it's just a shorter leash. Like I have in the back of my mind, Justin Verlander, to answer that question of the Twitter poll that I put out there and I asked y'all, because people wanted Justin Verlander, they felt that he should have had the fifth inning, no matter what. I was okay using him to start the inning after the leadoff double. I'm pulling Justin Verlander.
I'm with you.
So, but a lot of folks are like, well, no, he should have had the entire fifth. He's your ace. He's your workhorse. He's your dude. So if that is true, those people that are sending that message are saying that they put more weight on his regular season numbers, which were great, and he's going to win the American League Cy Young, and ignoring the fact that his recent playoff numbers have not been good, and ignoring the fact that over his career, his 8 World Series games, it's amazing to talk about Justin Verlander as this generational-type Hall of Famer, which he is, and then he has an 0-6 record, 6.07 ERA, and 8 World Series games. So, like, those people that are sending that message, they are ignoring the World Series numbers that Justin Verlander has, and for me, that is on my mind probably more than the regular season.
Mine too, because here's the thing. On a flip side, from a Philadelphia perspective, you're Rob Thompson. You're supposed to ride the fact that Wheeler's been your ace all year, and Wheeler's the man, and he's the dude, and he throws hard, and he does the things he does, and you're supposed to overlook the fact that he didn't have velocity and he didn't have control in his last start in the World Series when it matters the most, and it's not about how many games you're going to win total, you know, in a regular season. It's about winning 4 games before the other team, and the fact that if he goes back out there and he doesn't have 98-plus velocity, and he's not commanding anything, you have to be realistic in the fact that he's not going to have as long a leash and not going to be around as long if you plan on trying to win the World Series. Because this isn't about rewarding a guy for what he's done all year.
Yeah.
This is about rewarding your whole team for trying to win a championship.
And Verlander, honestly, like, maybe he's just saying the right thing in the press conference. He'd be the first one to tell you that. He'd be the first one to say that it's not about individual accolade.
He literally said it's about the team and I don't care what I do and things like that. But do you believe that in his head he's thinking that way? Because I think, sure, he wants to win it with his team.
I mean, he's a competitor.
But he's also an ego man when it comes to stats and his own legacy. And he knows this is a stain.
Sure, but if Dusty comes to get him after the leadoff double by Brandon Marsh in the fifth inning, he comes and gets him. Like, he could be mad at it.
But
what's he going to do?
But you could tell. But he's going to be a whole lot of pissed off.
So what?
I mean, I understand that. I'm just saying it's more about the look than anything else. He has to accept it because the manager's coming to get the baseball, and so that's what you have to do is give him the ball. But they've given so much leeway to JV since he's been an Astro that I'm sure that it would be a major deal.
Sure, but I mean,
to say it could have ramifications for him next season going forward, but I don't know that you could even worry about
he
that.
He doesn't have a leg to stand on. You just got rocked. You've given up 5 dudes to reach in your last 6 at-bats. You really don't have an argument. He doesn't. 6-0-3-0, I honestly think that Verlander's going to put an end to this nonsense, and he's going to come out as a dog and be World Series clincher.
I thought he was going to do that in Game 1.
He was off to that start. 4-6-8-3, I'm not scared of the next JV start, but I'm not confident he'll be dominant. Agree with you guys that he needs a short leash. 4-4-8-4, hoping JV is setting Game 5 up for a Charlie Morton-like performance if we win Game 3 and 4. Buddy, that would, of course, be the World Series clincher. 3-3-7-6, let him start Game 6 but have a shorter leash. I don't understand the whole Game 6 logic. I don't know if that's a typo, but I do want to have like that conversation because some people are coming to me at Twitter being like, oh, don't start him in Game 5, use him in Game 6. He's starting Game 5. He's going to be your Game 5 starter, and the way that it sets up the rest of the rotation, he should be the Game 5 starter. An interesting thought, if today's game does get postponed, now you're looking at that day off being basic, you're going to play Game 5 on that day. I think that the Astros would just keep that rotation. I think that they would still have McCullers, still have Javier, still have Justin Verlander. But in terms of the leash for Justin Verlander, one thing to consider is if that the World Series when it's scheduled, Game 5 would have an off day the very next day. So it makes it easier to have a shorter leash. We're like, okay, four innings, he looks a little shaky, two runs on three hits, let me turn it over to this weapon that I have in the bullpen. But if you don't have that off day and you're playing Game 6 the next day and then Game 7 2 days later as well, that could impact the leash that Justin Verlander would have in a potential Game 5.
No question. And again, because this is the greatest end-all, be-all of the season in the World Series, it's a different mindset and a different philosophy. And then when you base it on what he did in Game 1, that's why I said you're going to have the conversation in the privacy of your own locker room or in Dusty's office, but there has to be a mindset going in on both parties that, hey, look, this isn't personal, but it is. It's about the team, and it's about what we're trying to do for our bigger goal. He has to be okay with it.
I don't think he has to be okay with it. I don't think you had that meeting beforehand. Like, if you suck, we're going to pull you in the fourth. Like, you don't. That's not a conversation you can have.
Okay, Jeremy, but in pro sports, there's so much catering to your big time stars.
Understand that.
That is a bigger deal than it's not as easy as just saying, I don't think you have to. I don't think because there are ramifications. There are teams that are literally.
Where are they? He's mad at you and he leaves in free agency? Okay.
I think that's a problem. I think that could be a problem to the owner. The owner doesn't want that because that's his buddy.
So if
I'm not saying if Justin it's right Verlander, or wrong or you do or you don't based on that, but I'm telling you it's a reality.
I don't think it's reality. So if Justin Verlander's given up five runs, he's in the fifth inning, Jim Crane's going to be mad at Dusty Baker that he pulls
him
from the game.
I lived through it in basketball.
Did you? James Harden wasn't told before the game against the Clippers in Game 5, if you suck, we're not going to play you in the fourth quarter. You just did it because it was the best thing to do.
No, because even Kevin McHale told me after the game, too, he knew if I don't put him in the game, this guy's going to all offseason and all into next season. He's not going to forget it.
Sure.
He's going to stay on my ass. It ended up being him instead of Harden. But at the same time, it could go both ways. It's a factor. It's talked about. It is something that is a concern when you get to ownership in professional sports and even managers.
But it's not something you're thinking about pregame.
Like Mike D'Antoni wouldn't even talk to Harden. He would try and yell it out of his coach's office so he could send the message without having to talk to him because he knows he didn't want to do that with a guy that had the attitude of James.
You're not doing it pregame. And I also don't think
he
in a sport
off day.
You're going to tell Justin Verlander on an off day before he pitches, if you suck, we're pulling you in the fourth.
You're going to have, I tell you what, and I've seen it happen before, on the flight to Philadelphia, those two in the middle of the flight can sit down and say, let's just talk. And in the middle of the conversation, you talk about, hey, man, let's talk about scenarios and what could possibly play out. Just so at least the ground has been set. So the groundwork has been set, so if you have to face that situation, it's not going to surprise him. He's not going to go off the deep end.
He already pulled him in the fourth in the playoffs.
Okay, I'm just telling you. Okay, you have your opinion. I have mine.
713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. We can keep this conversation going. Also, let's get to the Fromber start in Game 2, because he was a bulldog for the Astros, and he said Twitter, he went off the deep row on Twitter. It was viral. On Twitter. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people with Doc Linville's office. Look, Doc Linville is a game changer. He is making a difference in people's lives with the NeoGraft procedure. And a lot of guys are thinning, balding, and they think that their next option is just to shave their head and deal with the consequence because Father Time is kicking their ass. But that's not the case anymore because of the NeoGraft procedure. It's not sprays and creams and foams and things that mask the problem. It's literally taking your hair where you're always going to have it and you have a lot of it, like the sides and the back, and genetically that's always going to stay, and moving some of that to where you need it most, like your forehead or the back of your head on top where you get those bald spots. He can take care of it, and literally the NeoGraft procedure is a game changer. I had it done, Granato, Fred Fowler. Everybody that's had it done raves about how it looks, the fact that the hair continues to get thicker, stronger, and grow and will never go away. The 95%+ success rate of every follicle moved is another game changer. But the biggest thing for you is, as an ESPN listener, you get a free consultation with Doc Linville and his staff that normally costs $150 for absolutely free. Ask all the questions, figure out all the answers, and find out if the procedure is right for you too. Just go to 975hair.com. Sign up for an appointment. Go in and ask everything from financing to the length of the procedure, recovery time, when you see the full results. And again, like I said, success rate, which is the one that got me. 95%+ of all the follicles moved, stay, and grow, and will be there for a lifetime. That was the one that got me over the top to go for it. Check them out today. Tell them I sent you by. I can't say enough good things about Doc Linville and the NeoGraft procedure. 975hair.com.
In independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Few people on Twitch, twitch.tv/ESPN975, weighed in on this. 713-780-ESPN if you'd like, or HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Todd says, why not just start Urquidy Game 5? I pressed Todd on that a little bit. He says, Urquidy Game 5, JV Game 6, Fromber Game 7. That means that you'd be choosing Jose Urquidy over Lance McCullers.
I'm not doing that.
I know Lance McCullers' last start was not very good. I know that he's going to hopefully have a start tonight. If he doesn't, it'll be tomorrow. Jose Urquidy has not pitched in the entire postseason.
Yeah, to me, your option, if you did want to extend the rotation, is Garcia based on what he did in Seattle. And, of course, he had the hiccup against Real Muto, and he was used in Game 1. But, you know, Urquidy at this point is a guy that maybe if you need him to kind of empty the tank over the course of three batters – and go, you know, be competitive or mop up some innings, it's one thing. But I think the days of thinking about Urquidy as a starter for this season, the rest of the year, are over. And they were over well before you got into the World Series. When he didn't pitch at all against the Yankees, and he hadn't pitched in that amount of time, no matter how many bullpens and other things he did, I think that he's not a starter anymore. He's a fill-in, you know, relief pitcher where you could possibly get some innings out of him or get some batters out of him, I should say. So I don't think that's an option regardless, and I think that you had other options better than him if you wanted to do that, and I don't agree with doing that in the first place.
Poncho points out that Urquidy's numbers in the playoffs are in the World Series. They've been fantastic. Mays is saying Urquidy has a great resume for the playoffs. That is true, but you're not giving a start to Urquidy over a second start to Lance McCullers. Now, if McCullers were to get shelled today, maybe it's a conversation we can have tomorrow or maybe 2 days because this weather forecast doesn't look great. But certainly at this point, you're not giving Urquidy a start over Lance McCullers. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Devin says, I haven't checked the weather forecast. I'm hitting refresh every 5 minutes. But is Game 3 in jeopardy of being postponed? Yes. The Astros, Phillies, and Major League Baseball are meeting in about 70 minutes to talk about their options. Now, the rain does look light, so maybe they could play through the rain. Do they want to do that with a natural off day on Thursday as well? You would just have 5 games in 5 days, potentially, if you don't play tonight.
Everything's magnified. It's on the table. There's too much to lose, though, I think, when you look at it and say, well, could a game be altered or decided by the weather or a guy that slips and falls or something weather-related as opposed to arguably the two best teams fighting it out to see which is better on the field? Mm-hmm. Baseball doesn't want that. You know, the national sponsors and the network, as much as they enjoy it, they don't enjoy it if it's drawn out over a 4 or 5 hour period of time and you lose your local news and you lose some of the continuity that goes into television. I don't think it's anybody's best interest in the World Series to have like major rain delays and stops and starts or run the risk of having weather be the bigger factor in who wins the game.
King of Twitches says JV typically doesn't have two bad starts back-to-back. That has typically been the case. I will give you that. 713-780-ESPN, HRMP listener line, 713-780-3776. Let's go there now for Dan. Dan, you're in the high with the Killer Bees. What's going on, Dan?
How's it going, guys? I just wanted to say, you know, in a way, I think this postseason has shown, at least for the future, who are real aces and who we need to get signed. I know Verlander was great during the regular season. I know he was historically good. Could argue he had his best year of his career. But I think people, and sometimes you know, Astros fans forget how consistent and how good Fromber has been really since the pandemic year. If you remember in that postseason, him and Correa almost carried us. Once we got down 3-0 against Tampa, going into, of course, last year where, yeah, he struggled in the World Series, but I think you could argue he was our best pitcher or most consistent pitcher all year. And then when you look at what he did this year, if it wasn't for JV's historic year, you could be talking about Fromber winning the Cy Young. And then in terms of the postseason, I mean, we know what Verlander is. As much as we want to, you know, praise the guy, he's been great in an Astro uniform. We can't forget what happened in 2019. He couldn't close out a game at home in Game 6. He went 0-2 in that World Series. He has no World Series wins. You know, Fromber is the guy that I think we should be looking at as our ace and a guy that we should be looking to sign long-term. I know he still has a couple years of arbitration left, But, I mean, that's a guy you want on your team, especially if you're going to be going to the postseason every year like we are. I mean, he's as clutch as it gets.
Yeah, they appreciate the call. And Fromber, look, you're right about everything you said about Fromber. I think the Killer Bees have been bullish on Fromber since before the Killer Bees. You mentioned the pandemic year. That was his first, like, breakout season, and it came in the 60-game sample. So you're like, what's he going to be going forward? And last year was really good, and this year was even better. Probably wouldn't win the Cy Young if it weren't for JV, but he's going to finish top five, maybe even top three.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I think top three is realistic for him. I think that you're continually watching the progression of a guy that his biggest issues, and a lot of the reasons why I had the issues with Abreu all season long, was similar to the start of Fromber's career. You have too good of an arm with too good a stuff to be caught between your ears enough to have it set you back. Fromber's biggest issues were control, not only just controlling his pitches, but walking too many guys and then losing his cool if things didn't go his way. And it was highlighted on both the radio as I was driving a little bit and catching that, as well as the TV. You know, they highlighted how they discovered him and how long it took and all those things. But the bigger thing was when he got with the Astro sports psychologist is when things really started to turn around, where he kind of kept those things in check, where he kind of was able to compartmentalize the small little blips on the radar of negativity and focus on the bigger picture. And he became a true pitcher instead of a guy that just could throw anything like a major league pitcher. He's a guy that's going to be around for a long time. When you got him and you have Javier and you have all these young pitchers, it gives you the comfort in knowing whether JV comes back or not and whether he signs here or elsewhere, you're going to be okay simply because Fromber's Fromber. And as we said, as Jeremy even notated, it wasn't just the fact that we were giving Fromber his due in saying that he quietly has done all the things he did, but with Javier quietly doing the things he did too, you've got two upper rotation guys, and we haven't even mentioned Lance McCullers if he's healthy.
Yeah. It's two things there, like the long-term view, and we'll have this conversation in much greater detail in the offseason, but maybe we'll spend a minute or two on it here. Fromber's locked up under club control until 2025, until he's 31 years old. So, like, the whole extension thing, I'm not rushing that, and I'm not a huge fan of locking up a starting pitcher in their early 30s anyways. So, like, just let him ride out this little club control. He's still got 3 years after this year. He's fine.
Don't
where
Russell
he's at.
Wilson until you have to Russell
unless
Wilson.
Unless you can Yordan Alvarez him, which basically means rip him off. The Justin Verlander thing, look, I was saying that it might not be in the best interest of the Astros bringing back Justin Verlander on $40 million before it was cool to say don't bring back Justin Verlander on $40 million. The Astros next year, pitchers that they have under club control, Verlander not under club control, Fromber, who we're talking about, Lance McCullers, who you talked about, who probably was the best pitcher on the team last year ahead of Fromber. Mm-hmm. You still have Luis Garcia. You still have Ozzie Urquidy. You have Christian Javier, who has better numbers than Fromber Valdez. And you have Hunter Brown, too, this kid that's coming up. That look, I don't think he's going to be Justin Verlander. People need to pump the brakes on that. But I think he's going to have a good big league career. Those six guys, before you even entertain the conversation of Justin Verlander, you still have arguably the best rotation in all of baseball.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And so you have, you know, the same way we say it's a business and you look on return on investment. Sometimes the biggest return on investment you're looking for are in the most important times that you're going through your business. That happens to be in the World Series. Justin Verlander's not getting any younger, and he's not getting any better, though he's been great all season long. But when you look at the big picture and you realize you have, literally in the arms race, you have a surplus of riches with all the guys you just mentioned under team control. If you could take and repurpose that $40-plus million he was looking for to two or three other players, which, again, to your credit, you brought up before anybody else when it wasn't cool to do, but it's a realistic conversation of how good a place you could be in by doing other things if you choose to move on from him.
Luxury because your pitching staff's so good. Katie Burner phone says, who would be a valuable asset for the Astros, Josh James or Forrest Whitley? Delete your account, Katie Burner phone. Just delete it right now. 713-780-ESP. Let's have that Fromber Valdez conversation. What he was doing in Game 2 that set Twitter a storm. It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, we all know about the World Series going on. We know NBA hoops every night. We know we just got over another great weekend of NFL and college football. It's a great time to be a sports fan, maybe in the best time of the year, and it's better when you can make the games more interesting with a wager on mybookie.ag. Join the MyBookie family today. Get your first deposit matched halfway up to $1,000. That means if you put $1,000 in, you get an extra $500 in your account. More money in your account, more games you can bet on, more chances you can win. Let the games begin. And now through Halloween, which is today, you got to do it today, You can claim 31 free spins in the MyBookie Casino if you put in the promo code BET975. That promo code is so important, I'll say it twice. BET975. Use it to get that first deposit matched halfway. Then also get your 31 free spins in the MyBookie Casino. And then put it in your back pocket and realize anytime they ask you for a promo code, if you put BET975, good things are going to happen. MyBookie has a new feature called Money Bag as well. Under that tab, you'll find a handful of bets that have just ridiculously crazy odds. Like, what inning will a home run be hit in a World Series game? You bet, get a random inning assigned to you, and if the first home run hits in that inning, you win big. Check out the Money Bag bets only on MyBookie.ag. Begin winning season right now today, right now as we get ready to get into Halloween, and get your first deposit matched halfway with MyBookie.ag and get those 31 spins. Use the promo code BET975. As I always tell you, bet anything, anytime, anywhere with the only place I tell you to do it. It's MyBookie.ag.
Independent thinking, unrestricted opinions. You're tuned in to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We'll get into the Fromber conversation in a moment, but Wayner's on the HRMP listener line and wants to defend JV. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. Wayne, what's up? You're in the Hive with Killer Bees.
Hey, what's going on? I don't think that JV did such a bad job. I think it's more credit to the Phillies figuring him out after the second run of the batters. As you can see in game two, they also tried to get Pablo on the same thing, but he was able to pitch out of it. But
what was the same thing? Like, what was the same thing, Wayne?
Two runners on.
What was the same thing? Trying to have success against a pitcher? Trying to hit a pitcher? Like, what was their game plan? What are you talking about? Wayner? Wayner, are you there?
Just called him a Wayner?
Yeah, it's on the board as Wayner. Like, wait, the trouble that I have here is that Justin Verlander was lousy. Like, every hitter in Major League Baseball history is trying to reach against every pitcher that they face in Major League Baseball history. The other team's going to be good some nights. The Phillies are good. The Phillies have the best lineup that the Astros have seen by far. It's a complete lineup. It's not star and scrubby like Seattle. It's not boom or bust like New York. It's a deep lineup. So you do tip your cap to them. I get that. But Justin Verlander was lousy. He was the first one to admit it. He was missing with spots. He was missing with locations. And more importantly than anything else, his breaking balls were crappy. He was leaving them up in the zone, catching too much of the plate, didn't have that normal wipeout stuff that he normally does.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's a topic of conversation. It ain't going away until everybody sees him pitch again. I mean, luckily you survived.
Yeah.
I mean, you got the split. You survived. Again, I think that I looked at it, you know, I kept kind of going over it in my mind after game one. Like, this shouldn't be that devastating to all these people that are losing their minds, but it's Verlander, and he's supposed to be your ace, and it's game one of the World Series. But when you look at the bigger picture, you lost a one-run game in extra innings. Those things happen. When you look at it from the perspective of how you lost it, you had Tucker break out. He had two bombs. You had, you know, signs of the team offensively doing a lot of good things. You got a lot of good relief pitching performances along the way. And it was your first loss of the entire freaking playoffs. But people suddenly were ready to throw the white flag up and go, yeah, we're done. We're finished. That was mind-boggling to me.
Yeah, that is a bit mind-boggling, the reaction after game one. We'll get into that a little bit later. 713-780-ESPN.
I just keep bouncing us around like a Super Bowl.
713-780-3776. Fromber Valdez, yep. Game two, very fidgety, going to his right palm quite a bit, wiping his brow quite a bit. This has set a lot of Philly fans, they're going nuts. They're going nuts on Twitter. They think that Fromber Valdez was messing with the sticky stuff in game two.
To me, the way it looked like he was going to things, it looked more like he was looking for slippery stuff than sticky stuff if he was looking to anything at all. The thing that really pisses me off is if he had was doing all this stuff and there was something to it, why didn't the umpires feel it? Why didn't they know that? Why didn't they see what everybody else was evidently who was playing I Spy saw? Why didn't they jump in? We saw what Buck Showalter did early in the playoffs, where Buck Showalter called a meeting, had the umpires go out and look at Joe Musgrove, and check him, check his ears, check his glove, check his hand, check his hair, check his hat. I mean, if this was such a big deal, then the umpires and somebody should have caught it and should have been on it before he left the game.
My stance with this is that, like conversations that you engage with, you allow yourself to engage in those conversations. Like it's a two-way street. It's communication, right? It's a medium. You talking to me, me talking to you. You choose in things that you want to engage with or choose to open up a conversation about something. I look at that as so much of a nothing burger. I haven't even allowed myself to really go there to like think about it. Now, it's unavoidable, right? Because it's on Twitter, things like that. Pitching Ninja, who is a great follow on Twitter, he posted a video, I think it was yesterday, of Framber Valdez in his first start. Framber Valdez this year. He was doing things in his first start this year that were the exact same things that he was doing in game two.
He said he's a creature of habit. He's been doing it ever since he's pitched back in the Dominican.
And he talked about that, too, about how there's certain antics that you see over there that he's brought over here, changing gloves, changing cleats. He says that he changes cleats and gloves before every start. He'll warm up with a different glove and different spikes during, like, you know, in the bullpen, things like that, before a start, and then he'll change right before the start. He said after the first inning, it was a long inning. He didn't think he was that sharp, that effective, and he wanted to, like, switch it up. So that's something that he went with.
It's like the NFL. They warm up with certain cleats that have all the different designs. He had those bright Astros colors cleats on, and a lot of times to show out on a national stage, you know, maybe he decided. But baseball players are creatures of habit, and they're very superstitious, too. Like you said, there's been plenty of times where if I felt like I didn't have my A game when I was in college, I'd go back and do something or say I didn't do something I needed to do. I'm going to go do that right now, whether it be change a hat, change something, do something so you feel as comfortable as possible. So I totally get what he did. But again, most pitchers are looking for stick. The way his hands were sliding and gliding and moving around, he was looking. Mike Stanton said this on the Wheelhouse, I believe it was, or on one of the shows, maybe it was the Bench. But he talked about how the dryness can affect a pitcher as much as anything else. It's the same reason why they lick their fingers all the time or they bitched about the new baseballs, rightfully so, that they were too slippery. Sometimes you don't want slippery if you're a pitcher. You lose control. Mm-hmm. But what you do want is that stick moisture to kind of create that bond with the baseball a little bit more when you're pitching. But you want more stick than you want slide.
I kind of relate it to you. You lick your fingers when you turn pages. Like you're just kind of finding good a point. Little bit of, yep. of a grip. I was also watching I was watching Pedro Martinez on MLB Network, and he was talking about, look, I think it's rosin and sweat. I think whenever you combine the rosin and sweat, that it could kind of give you a little bit of a grip. Might not be sticky, but it can give you the grip. And again, the umpires are sitting there checking them every inning. Like, they're checking them very often. So if there's something sticky there, they're going to look at it. And Rob Thompson, the Phillies manager, too, he was like, look, they're checking them all the time. If there's something going on there, they're going to do something about it. He said they even noticed it in his last start whenever they faced him at the end of the regular season. The Phillies in that clubhouse, it seems like a nothing burger to them. I find it to be a nothing burger. Twitter's having a whole lot of fun with it. Pedro Martinez was on MLB Network, and they were he actually had a rosin bag and then like some sweat. And he says a lot of times when you combine the two and you kind of heat it up a lot, like real quick, that you can kind of get a little bit of a grip-type substance. I think that's what Fromber's doing. I think Fromber's combining the sweat, the rosin bag, which are both obviously legal, and then using that to find some sort
of
grip with the ball.
To your point, watch how many pitchers, either before an inning or before a batter, will take the rosin bag and pat it all over their wrist so that the combination is what they're looking for, and it's legal. So there's nothing wrong with what they're doing, but it's a way of doing it so that they feel like they have a more confident grip on the baseball. So get over it. The umpires, if they felt like that was a problem or if they felt like it didn't feel, if it felt too tactified or it felt like it was something out of the norm, they're going to go after it. I mean, Showalter literally called out a pitcher in the playoffs. They know that there's everything is on hyper notice and everything's under a microscope.
I said this to you guys off air. If he's cheating, that's impressive as hell. Being able to get away with it in the World Series when everybody is you know, paying more attention, the umps are checking every inning. It's like, first of all, I don't believe he is. But second of all, if he is, like, he deserves some credit for how the hell he's managing to get away with it.
Yeah.
Honestly, I believe that. I don't care what team it is. If you can get away with cheating when you are being watched that closely, I don't know. That's kind of impressive.
I find it to be very ludicrous that people think he's cheating. Like, he's literally being checked very often. I don't think it's every inning nowadays for starters. But he's being checked 3 to 4 times during the game and also when he's leaving. It's a rosin bag. It's a sweat thing. If he has bravado to do it in the World Series when everybody's watching, he's got bravado to do it in the World Series when everybody's watching. I just don't believe it to be true. Here was Framber after game two through his translator whenever he was asked the question about everybody's having a little bit of a watchful eye after what you were doing in game two.
Nobody should think of it as anything like in the wrong way. I do it out in the open. But again, those are just all things that tendencies that I do throughout the game. Maybe distract the hitter a little bit from what I'm doing. Like maybe look at me rubbing different things and not thinking about the pitch that I'm going to throw. And I think I've been doing it all season. Just again, just tendencies like that a Dominican thinks that we do just to be able to stay loose. And you know, just tendencies. The important thing obviously is to win. And you know, we're winning. Obviously, winning legally. But yeah, just random tendencies.
I love the fact that he was like, this is a dude who has a shrink, right? Framber Valdez has a shrink. The dude that has a shrink is saying he's playing mind games with the hitters that he's facing. I find that part to be ironic and hilarious.
Yeah, it really is just, again, a lot of people grasping at straws, but a lot of people know the power of social media these days, and we know what John Boy did in the past. Everybody thinks that they're the detective that we all need and that they're going to get to the bottom of some major uncovering that no one else could catch on to. You don't think the umpires who are on the damn field, what are there, seven of them, that are constantly watching every single thing that happens every split second of the game, didn't pick up on something? If they saw that, they wouldn't have gone, hey, wait a minute, what's going on? Let me check him a little bit closer in between innings. Figure something out. If they didn't, why should you be the one that wants to keep trying to figure it out?
Six of them. Poncho says nobody has questioned Framber before. Now the Phillies are crying about it. Framber should now embellish his mannerisms just to mess with them. It sounds like that's what Framber was doing. I find that to be awesome for the dude that goes to a shrink. He's playing the mind games. 713-780-ESPN, 713-780-3776. You alluded to this a while ago, Blinkers. The reaction of Astros fans after game one, and then we saw the reaction of Texans fans yesterday after the Titans. Which fan base overreacted more? It's the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Hey, for the break, tell you again about Doc Linville. Look, guys, I know that you've got enough to worry about on a daily basis. Sometimes you're worried about so much that you're pulling your hair out, or maybe you're just losing it and don't think you'll ever get it back. There's an alternative now. It's all natural, and it can be a game changer for you like it was for me. It's called the Neograft procedure. And I found out that genetically, you're always going to have the hair along the sides and the back of your head. It just never goes away. But now, because of Doc Linville and this procedure, he can take some of that hair, like every third or fourth follicle, and start transplanting it and moving it to where you need it most, where you're balding or you're thinning, and it can actually be a game changer in getting your hair back and saving your appearance and giving you self-confidence. I did it. I couldn't be happier with it. You can look into it and see if it's right for you, too. You're an ESPN listener. You get a consultation with Doc Linville and his staff for free. It normally costs $150. You can ask all the questions, get all the information, and see if it's right for you without a dime out of your pocket. Just go to 975hair.com and make an appointment. Talk to them. Figure out how long the procedure is, the payment options, the recovery time, when you'll see the full results, and the biggest game changer for me, the fact that 95%+ of all the follicles moved are going to stay and going to grow and going to be there for the rest of your life. I believe in this procedure. I believe Doc Linville is the best at doing it. You should check out and see if it's right for you too. 975hair.com. Go check out my friend Doc Linville.
Now back to the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Everybody's just talking about the Framber thing, saying, look, nuts, conspiracy theory. Some people are also throwing in some Philadelphia jabs, which I'm here for. How sad is it that Philadelphia's favorite sports icon is a fictional character? 0738. Look, I don't mind Philadelphia as much as some other people. I know a lot of people don't like Philadelphia at all. I don't mind visiting Philly, but I have always found it very, very weird that the biggest sports icon in that city is a dude in a movie. That is odd. That is bizarre.
Adrian?
Yeah, I mean, the Rocky Balboa, they have a statue of
him. They do. I was going to say,
nuts.
I've seen it.
It's so weird.
I've jogged around it. I saw it in Philadelphia.
Nice flex.
Otherwise, the greatest sports figure in Philly history is Allen Iverson.
Oh, Nick Foles.
Dr. J?
I hung out with Allen Iverson once in Philadelphia TGI Fridays.
I thought it was a Friday.
I looked at him across the bar.
I think you guys think I'm joking. It's Nick Foles. How can it not be Nick Foles?
Don't they call him Big D Nick?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, Iverson's probably in the conversation.
I think AI and Dr. J are there.
Man, I really want to know.
Dr. J.
Yeah.
Did they won a championship with Dr. J, right?
Dr. J and Moses, yeah.
Yeah, so
that
I think
that was the 4-5-4 game. Series.
What year was that?
They've won three. 55, 67, and 83. So Dr. J's been 83.
Yep. It was 83.
Dr. J is probably bigger than Nick
probably,
Foles.
Probably, but I think Nick Foles is bigger than Allen Iverson.
You've had Steve Carlton and Mike Schmidt and some of the guys. You know, the Phillies were good.
Imagine that it was here.
Their biggest star is Eric Lindros. Let's be honest.
99. Hey, Phillies won a World Series in what, 80?
Well,
the Phillies, they won one in 08.
Yeah.
But I think they also have one in 80.
I think in 80 was Pete Rose and Carlton and Mike Schmidt and Larry Boa and all those guys. And then they won another one when – was Jimmy Rollins on that team? And
I think Ryan Howard
Ryan
was
Howard,
too.
Yeah.
And then they had the pitching, didn't they? Then they had, like, Hamels and Lee.
Doc Holliday.
Yeah.
They had Doc Holliday.
Yeah, they had Hamels. They didn't have Doc Holliday
No?
That year. No. That's surprising. I thought Doc
Holliday
was on
that team. Yeah, I
thought
he was on that team, too.
You know who was on that team?
Uh-uh.
Bradley Lidge.
He was their closer.
And he was dominant that year, if
sure
I remember
was.
Right. Yeah, they had Howard, Utley, Rollins. They were accused of cheating that year, too, by the way.
Hmm.
1980, yeah, they had Pete Rose. Larry Boa was their shortstop. He's kind of a legend in Philadelphia. Certainly not on that.
Mike Schmidt, Greg Luzinski. Yeah. Type guys.
But you know who's bigger than all of them? Rocky stinking Balboa. How is that? Like, that they have actual, like, sports history in that city.
Yeah.
Yet Rocky Balboa is their biggest sports star. It's insane. 713-780-ESPN.
Like, here's the thing when we were talking about Astros fans, though.
Randall Cunningham was overrated.
Okay, but they loved him. The thing that really bothers me is the fact that, like, Philly fans, you know, they're all tough and they're boisterous and they're whatever. But yet, they're little sensitive bitches, too. The thing is like, the fact is I've got friends that are Philly fans that unfortunately have my number that listen to me every day when we have these shows, these conversations, just decide that the text line or the chance to tweet or call isn't good enough. They decide to text me directly and want to try and start it up like it's this war of words and yo, we're Philly, and, you know, Verlander sucks, bro. And then after they won game one, JT's the MVP. We're going to win it in five, yo. You hear me? I'm like, do I care? I literally don't give an F.
It sounds like you might.
No, it's like, stop texting me. If I wanted to talk crap with you or someone else, I'd go find the conversation. You sought me out just because you were feeling good about one game, one win. Just may the better team win and go for it. But I don't need all that.
Which fan base, kind of speaking to that, do you think overreacted more? The Astros after game one? Ooh. Or a lot of the Texans folks after yesterday's game.
I don't understand why reality finally set in with the Texans now. Was it that it hit rock bottom because of how bad the offense was and just how pathetic the overall performance was where you couldn't stop Derrick Henry? Because
yeah.
We've been telling you and setting you up for this before the season even started, though you were in denial.
This is the problem that I had. Like, certainly the Texans on the field yesterday was hard to watch. They weren't very good. The problem that I have with it's kind of the reaction to it that, oh, this is unacceptable for the Houston Texans. Changes need to be made. How can we live with this? Okay. If something's unacceptable, that means that you're unwilling to accept something and that you have to change something. What's going to change? Also, to me, it tells me what you thought of the Texans going into the season, which means that you obviously overshot any sort of expectations you had about this team, and or you don't know how to evaluate talent in the NFL. Like, to say that this was unacceptable tells me everything I need to know about you. It's part of the reason the whole embrace the suck thing. Embrace the suck doesn't mean tank. Embrace the suck means have a realistic expectation of where this team is with the roster that they put together.
It's acceptance, basically. Accept who you are now and the fact that if you just roll with it for one more year, you could be sustainably better for a long period of time. Just letting the cards fall where they may and trusting in the guys that have already had put in one really good draft for you with extra picks along the way from the Watson trade. It's not like we wanted this. It's not like we're happy about this. But this is the formula and the recipe for the best chance of long-term success. That's why we've been promoting it.
If saying it unacceptable tells me you have no idea what you're talking about with this team from the jump, like, completely honest, because if you didn't think yesterday was possible, much less probable, you don't know what you're talking about when it comes to this team. I don't understand how you can get to a point of such anger to where you're saying, oh, this is something that's completely unacceptable. Okay, well, then what are you going to accept? What are you going to do? What are you going to change? It's an empty threat. It's like saying, oh, I'm going to take away everything from your kid, but you're really not going to take everything away from your kid. Like, you're saying things just to be angry and mad. It's like, what's the dude's name on The Simpsons? Homer Simpson's dad, where he's like yelling at everybody. You're just having this fake outrage. That's the reaction I got yesterday from Texans fans. That's what you should know the Texans are going to do, because they aren't very good. They have the worst roster in the NFL. So if yesterday was unacceptable to you, you had this false, blind hope about what the Houston Texans could be.
Yeah, I mean, that's the bigger issue, is the fact that, you know, you can't find any kind of middle ground. You're either way too high or way too low. like from an Astros fan perspective, you hadn't lost a game in the whole playoffs. You had run through unscathed all the way to the World Series. So now because you don't sweep the World Series playing, I guess you're supposed to be playing one of the best teams in baseball in the final series of the year, if you don't go through with a clean sweep, you should jump off a cliff. I mean, the fact is that you're going to have highs and lows and ebbs and flows in any series and anything that you do at this point in the season. From a Texans perspective, it's different. There aren't the highs. There's a ton of lows. Now, you can see the highs in the fact that the guys you drafted have potential. They're starting already. They're making a difference. You see a Pierce and a Petrie and guys that you already know are going to be here for the long haul and be substantial players on this team, which is a high. But overall, you accept the fact there's going to be a whole lot more lows before you get to the consistent highs. And you should be okay with it, but you're not because social media allows you to vent and show the world your overreaction.
Yeah, I just don't understand the unacceptable and this outrage for a team that you didn't expect to be very good. Now, that said, I think that the reaction to Game 1 of the World Series was actually worse than the reaction I saw yesterday from the Texans. Like, you lost your first playoff game. I understand that you had to sweat Game 2 a little bit harder than you would have liked, and you blew it. You're a 5-0. There's no denying that. You blew that game with your ace on the mound. But to all of a sudden doubt that the Astros could either A, win the series or make it a series, that is incredibly far-fetched to me for what has been the best team in all of Major League Baseball for the last half dozen seasons.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I like to blame social media for part of this because of the overreaction gets magnified so quickly. And then it's one thing if you're sitting around with your boys at the bar watching the game or you're sitting around in your living room and you're venting. But when you decide that the minute of first vent that you decide to put it out there for the world to see and then it steamrolls and other people are having similar opinions and you see it becomes Astros Twitter, then you start going, come on, folks. Like, you had the best team in the American League. You ran the table on the American League. And yet the sky is falling because you lost a one-run game in extra inning.
Yeah, which overreaction did you think was crazier? 713-780-ESPN. AR Platinum says if the Texans fans were embracing the suck, there would be no overreacting. Astros losing in big moments is par for the course in Houston sports, but still overreacted. I give the edge to the Astros. Now, that's not all of them. It was only like a very, very vocal minority, but they existed. 713-780-ESPN. Apparently, Brendan has a list of the 30 most beloved Philadelphia athletes of the last 30 years.
I don't have a list of 30, but I asked.
What's the list? How many?
Seven, eight guys maybe, not even quite.
Is Rocky Balboa at the top of the list?
He is not.
Is he on the list, period?
No.
Is Donovan McNabb and Terrell Owens on the list?
Neither of them are on the list.
That's, really?
Okay. So, I texted Greg, who, as we've mentioned
Carson
before on the
Wentz.
Show, resident Philly fan. His is Ryan Howard.
Okay.
He said, fan base universally, Brian Dawkins.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Chase Utley, Allen Iverson, and
Dr.
Nick
J.
Foles.
Oh. Nick Foles?
Where's Dr. J?
Probably a little old for Greg.
Yeah, Greg probably didn't. He probably wasn't around for that.
Never
I can't
saw
believe...
that. Never saw the move behind the backboard against the Lakers, starting on one side, finishing on the other off the board. I think that was in the finals.
I definitely saw that highlight growing up, but I had no idea who that
was. Taken off from the free throw line.
You didn't know who that was?
As a child. I'm talking about as a child. Like, that's not a name. Dr. J isn't somebody who I thought of as a child.
Can we change all the imaging of the show, and I can, from this point forward, go as Dr. JB? Can we do that the rest of the existence
can
of the show?
Can you grow the fro along with the...
I probably could.
The super beard?
It wouldn't really fro out. It'd probably just get long
he
and curly.
He had the ZZ Top beard along with the super fro that would flow in the wind.
Swaggy. Jasper said, unacceptable fans probably also like Stephen A. Smith. LOL, fake emotion. Texans are terrible. How do you watch that game? Unacceptable for the Houston
Texans. I do
want
to say this real quickly.
Unacceptable.
I don't agree with the fake emotion idea. I think the reason that both of these sides are the way they are is because of emotion. Like, I don't think the fans who were saying the Astros were done really believed that. They just felt hurt.
They were scared. Yeah. I think they were scared.
And I not quite the
Which
same.
I get. I get that.
But I think it's similar for the Texans. You watch that and go, this is unwatchable. If football's your first sport, like it is mine, and you
that's
watch
not, that's
that
not,
game.
That's not the phrase, though. The phrase isn't unwatchable, because I agree with you that it was unwatchable, but you sit through it because you have to.
Haven't you seen enough unwatchable football all season to already have come to that conclusion?
I think that was the most unwatchable game
of the
season.
But that's changing. That's moving the goalpost, in my opinion.
I agree with that.
What I'm saying is, emotionally, If you're somebody who loves football, you wait all year for football to come around, and that's the product you get, I get why emotionally you say that's unacceptable.
But you should know that going in if you have realistic emotions.
You should also know you're probably
going to
lose the World Series game.
This was going to be a season-long problem.
Right.
No, all I'm saying is it's emotion.
Right. It is the emotion, but it's being fake emotion, in my opinion. If you have realistic emotion of where a team's at, I didn't watch that game yesterday and go, that's unacceptable. The Texans, like the Texans currently, their whole franchise in the 2022 season is unacceptable to like what you want them to eventually become. But you can't compare the Texans in 2022 relative to any other NFL team. Why? Because they suck.
Maybe
they're terrible. They have the worst roster in the NFL. Unacceptable? They've been unacceptable for the last 3 years.
If you had the worst roster in the NFL a year ago without argument, and you had one draft to try and turn it all around, the fact that you had a fan base that thought this team could be competitive is just completely like rainbows in the sky.
He said all 15,000 fans were upset at NRG Stadium. 713-780-ESPN. It's our Mailbag Monday. Every Monday at 2 o'clock, you ask the Killer Bees whatever you want. 713-780-3776. It is the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.